You're listening to the Donor Growth Podcast, forward-looking conversations for those who believe that donor growth is possible.
Every week, we'll explore a thought-provoking topic to help build deeper relationships with more of your donors. We are your hosts, Luis Diaz
and Mike Dirksen. Now let's get into it. All right, today it's fundraisers and cars getting coffee. What does that mean?
It means that it's going to be very awkward for us to get into our respective cars and try to drink a coffee together.
So it means that this is just us. Today, we're just talking. There's a whole bunch of topics we're going to cover. It's not a focused one topic conversation. This is Luis and I kind of on a car ride talking about stuff we've been thinking about lately.
Exactly. And yeah, I don't think of anybody else in the world, Mike, and I don't want to get weird about this, but I don't think I could have this conversation with anybody else in the world. But for those who are used to having a step-by-step framework on each episode or a very disciplined way to think about things, today is more of the free-for-all.
Yeah, and like jump in, right? There's room in this car. Jump in, come on this ride with us. We're just going to cover a bunch of things that we've been thinking about lately when it comes to fundraising.
Great. Mike, number one, that's yours. It says focus, better, comma, more, comma, new. What does that mean?
Yeah, this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately, both in terms of client work and in terms of our own business. I think it might take me explaining this a little bit. But
I'm sure it's going to be valuable.
We just presented a growth plan to a client, and a lot of the things that we included were not sexy at all. And what I mean by that is they were not new and shiny. It was a lot about the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like to think that I'm a fairly digitally forward person. Personally, we mostly use digital to grow our own business, even though we're direct mail experts. Personally, I very much love the digital space. Mm-hmm. And I am suggesting to a lot of people to pick up the phone and call people.
My goodness.
And
the dissonance.
There was all these unsexy things in there, like calling people, like choosing five lapsed donors and having a conversation, and then choosing five about to lapse donors and five monthly donors and five, you know, loyal donors, and just doing a bit of an insights project by having some conversations, having some coffees and some lunches.
You must get gold out of those.
And that's the hope, right? And the thing, the resistance is always like, yeah, that doesn't feel like what's the new thing we should be doing? You know? And I'm coming to realize more and more that, man, the focus to do the fundamentals well is so hard. And for myself as well in our business, it's just so hard of having that focus. And so I'm just thinking like, man, before we do new stuff, what about we just like make a list of the things we're already doing and how can we do them better? And
so you're trying to get people to eat spinach
a little bit. Also myself, right? So Luis, you and I have got a few projects going. We had a call with somebody a week ago about an exciting opportunity. And then for a few days, I was just thinking about this opportunity. And it was the shiny stuff in front of me. And
yeah, totally.
I just last night, I had this LinkedIn post about, hey, like take 3 minutes, one idea per sticky, grab a bunch of stickies, one idea per sticky, and write down all the things you're already doing. How can you make them better? So I did it for our business. And I came up with so many things that before pursuing a new shiny opportunity, things that we can be doing better. And so I just have this thought of like, you know, let's just, I don't know, the focus to do the things we're already doing a lot better, then doing more of it, and only then trying to do like new stuff. Like better can be more, and better can be new. There can be a new way of doing what you're doing already better. But that's
can I share a story about this? I've been thinking, so unsurprisingly, because Mike and I are starting to brain meld, I've been thinking of this as well. And I recently was in a situation where I learned what I think is a timeless lesson from a person that's a out of this world fundraiser called Jim Langley. Okay. So the conversation was about getting a nonprofit executive, an ED, a president of the foundation, to maybe learn a little bit about how good fundraising is done. Because this was this person, big ego, thought they knew everything. They said, oh yeah, I'll call John and Mary Doe, I'll get that money. And then, you know, they give them a call and he'd plop and ask, like, it was counterproductive, wasn't doing it well. And of course, it's really hard to get somebody like that, but maybe that applies to all of us since we all have egos, to eat spinach. What Jim suggested was, let's frame this in the context of a new opportunity or a new paradigm or a new project that we're doing, you know? So, yeah, I mean, you've been doing, you know, great, super grateful. It's been amazing. You're the best. But now let's talk about how we're going to approach this new project, because it's, you know, different and there's new players involved. And I thought just that was just that whole approach. And they've seen it a couple of times as well, right? Where it's much easier to start a conversation about something that sounds like a quote unquote new project, new initiative. You just have to be smart about putting the spinach in there, you know, instead put the spinach inside the whatever quiche cake, right? Chocolate cake.
So you're saying definitely do the things you're doing already, do them a lot better. Just frame them as new. This is like when the some skyscrapers wanted to make the elevators faster because the elevators were a little bit outdated and people are used to some faster elevators. But like it would have cost millions and millions and millions of dollars to put a new elevator in. So they called some behavioral scientists and they just put mirrors in the elevator. And all of a sudden, okay, People didn't think that that ride wasn't all that slow. They didn't realize how slow it was. They were busy looking at themselves. So you didn't actually, it's not a new thing. You just kept the existing elevator. You improved it. You made it better. You made the experience better for the people in it. And that's kind of what you're saying. It's like, oh, we're still going to do the basics and we're going to do them better. We're going to frame them as a new opportunity, as a new way of looking at it, a new approach. And it'll be easier for people to eat the spinach that way. It's kind of like saying you can eat spinach or you can eat superfood. Wouldn't you like some superfood?
Exactly. I mean, totally. You're a marketing genius, Mike.
Here's your superfood. It's spinach, but
oh, no. Yeah. Or you some other language.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's exactly it. So anyhow, thank you for bringing that up. I learned that recently. I've been mulling over it for my own business, but sometimes you also have to account for ego. And that's a good way to ego, like in the mirror, that mirror image. I love that. And that's a good way around it. You want to keep going with our fundraisers?
I just want to wrap this up. I'm listening to a lot of Warren Buffett content lately and Charlie Munger. And I don't know if this is a Munger quote or I don't know if it's a Charlie Buffett quote, because their brains also meld together and it's hard to tell. Which, you know, one of the things was like success comes from doing the common things for an uncommon amount of time. So just having the patience to do the common things really well, just forever. And other people get bored and they start doing new stuff, different stuff. They jump around. They try this. They try that. They never give it enough time to compound.
Totally.
And the Buffett Munger sort of philosophy is just like, do like the common thing that is the fundamentals that you know works. In their case, it's picking good companies, but whatever. And you know, that you know that works and just do it for a long amount of time and let it compound. So that kind of also spurred this thinking. But let's go to your next thought, which is you texted me last night with an idea.
I think this was, yes, not, I feel guilty about that text. I'm a little bit like that situation that you just mentioned, where sometimes I latch onto an idea and I just can't let go. It's paid off for me. I'm working on some of the same problems that I identified when I started my career, you know, longer than I wish to admit ago. But, you know, sometimes I just go down rabbit holes. So one of the texted you about is, okay, CRMs, I have, we've talked about this in our business idea episodes, which is I have pet peeves around them. I don't think everybody needs a Salesforce when they're really small. You know, I think they're cumbersome. They're very hard to adapt to the specific nonprofit. And I think that comes in a time where there are tools that are called no code tools, where it's fairly easy without a ton of programmers. I sent you a video of firm that literally with one person spin this up, you could create your own CRM. I don't know. I just can't let go of that. You've pointed out that nobody is ever happy with their CRM, whatever one they have.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a complicated space to be in.
Now, the idea you texted me is,
I don't know if people think about this,
is like a cheapo version of a CRM, which is for maybe for small shops who don't need the Salesforce, but who need more than Google Sheets.
Uh-huh. Exactly. That space. You're starting to fundraise. You're no longer just depending on the founders or the executive director's personal Rolodex. But really, anything else is either overblown or inflexible. Like, there are solutions that are cheap for smaller nonprofits, but they're typically pretty standardized.
Yeah. And this would be something like, you need some sort of tool for the actual database, and that could be Airtable or something like that. And then you need some sort of tool for the front-facing interface that the nonprofit will actually use. And that can be built in Bubble or something.
Bubble, software, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's okay. For those that are more tech savvy here.
And your idea your idea is to build that and then to have it be proprietary or not be proprietary. Just like, no, this is the system. This is how it works. This is how you get started. And once you hit, I don't know, 1,000 donors, maybe it's time for something else. But to get started.
Totally. Exactly. And maybe it's we give it out to you for free, but we maintain it for you. Mm-hmm. We help you get to those 1,000 donors. So for that kind of first level of growth where you're actually growing, finally you're growing, but just now you're suddenly having all these calls with vendors and it's super overwhelming. And everybody says that theirs is the right solution, but you can kind of pretty obviously see that it isn't. It's right. That stage. And what you actually need is more advice on how to build it right and how to do things, not how to do another transition to a huge system.
Yeah. But will it have AI? Can you have a CRM nowadays that isn't AI powered? Can you?
That's your first point. The new things.
Every tech company in the world announcing we now have AI. It's like, oh, you now have a ChatGPT integration. Call it what it is. Yeah.
I don't know if it will or it won't. I don't know if this thing will exist. The cheapo CRM. We're gonna call it. I don't know. I like that space. I think there's something there that's needed in the world. There's a gap to fill.
So here's why that's for me, why that's on brand for you is you're like a tinkerer.
Uh-huh.
You're like tinkering all the time. Like you build a chatbot. You're always like figuring stuff like this out. So this seems to me to be like very much in your wheelbase, which is the Venn diagram of strategic thinking and like MacGyvering solution. So this makes a lot of sense. I also think that maybe the big opportunity is like developing countries where
we've talked about that. You brought that up and places where the payment gateways, right, are very specific.
Yeah.
And you can't use a solution that's famous in the US.
Yeah. So you can use a Salesforce anywhere in the world, but let's take I don't want to name names here, but sure. Let's just name names. Cause it's not like we're, whatever, a Bloomerang, for example, which small shops often use, or a Kindful, they're not going to bother to figure out how to launch their CRM in South Africa or in Zimbabwe or in Colombia. And why should they? Their growth market is here. It's built for this audience. Again, they're focused on better and more before focusing on new, right? So, but maybe that's where this makes sense. Like a cheaper version CRM for the rest of the world, where other CRMs just haven't bothered figuring it out yet.
Yeah, there's something there. We'll keep tinkering, you know, building in public. The methodology for me that I found successful has been take these ideas out to market quickly, get good feedback, mm-hmm. and I kind of refine them over time. And I end up incorporating them for our clients once they're like pretty well cooked.
How's the chatbot, by the way? You've built this thing, the fundraiser's best friend, an AI chatbot. How's that going?
So we actually have three chatbots now. One of them is a content generation tool. That's the most successful, the BFF. The other one is a major gifts coach. So you ask it problems and it replies. The prompt engineering I did in the back end kind of gives it like DPP principles. You know, engagement leads to giving. Co-creation is a smart, you know, leads to greater investment. If you make donors feel valued and seen, they'll retain better and, you know, you'll have a better chance of soliciting major gifts, things like that. And I asked it to think about all those things while it acts as a coach. So lots of fun. The last one is actually one I like a lot because it incorporates that fundraising appeal checklist that I put out years ago that, you know, it's not the be all end all, but it's a pretty good resource. But it incorporates all that knowledge and it uses it to correct any letter that you give it. So you just pop a letter and it reviews it, you following the checklist principles, which are mostly data-based and kind of direct response, good practice-based. Yeah. And then it tries to rewrite it for you. So I like that because it's a tool that incorporates knowledge. A lot of the ones I see now, you know, they don't have a point of view and you don't really learn from using them. So I like that angle.
Is this ChatGPT prompts in the background or did you train your own model?
Totally ChatGPT prompts.
Yeah.
It's becoming less and less necessary to do your own training. Now, even ChatGPT has a module where you can upload like information, I don't know how much, but a good amount of information on your nonprofit or on whatever it is that, and then it uses that first before going to like everything else it knows to try to answer.
So is your prompt every time, here's the principles I want you to keep in mind. Here's the checklist I want you to keep in mind. Or is that already just stored in ChatGPT as context?
You don't even see that. You don't even see that. You just see a chatbot and it's saying, hi, how can I help you? I'm a fundraising coach. Ask me questions like, why isn't Oprah giving to us? How come rich person is in our neighborhood and, you know, we're not getting money from them? What should I do with this donor who behaved inappropriately?
Yeah. So that's what a user sees at the front end. But in the back end, are you sending a full-on prompt to ChatGPT every time? Is the prompt, here's all the principles, here's this, here's that. Now give me an answer based on that.
Okay. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
this is fundraisers and cars getting coffee. How did you build the front end interface that a user sees? What are you using for that?
For whoever's interested, Zapier has tools now to do this. Really handy.
Yeah. And Zapier is also the tool that shuttles that info over to ChatGPT and you can use it for a whole bunch of things. It's a good
tool. Same thing like we just discussed for the CRM idea. It's a point and click, essentially. You just have to think in a structured way. You know, you have to kind of think like in steps like a computer.
Yeah.
But otherwise you don't need to know any coding. Magical. Really, if you think of the opportunity that is in front of us, it's magical. I think it's more a matter of too much complexity, too little time, too many competing demands that make people feel overwhelmed.
Some might even say it's a problem of coordination.
We might even have a podcast episode about that.
Right. That's
very
cool.
Good. Thanks. So you said in our chat a few minutes ago that it's not about the ask string.
Oh man.
And then I said, I've spent my whole career only thinking about how to do a better ask string. And you're tearing this down now, Mike. If it's not about the ask string, what is it about?
I mean, I'm not saying ask strings aren't important. So I'm going to lead with that. But this came out of a conversation about the giving crisis or the generosity crisis. This doomsday thing that, you know, we're all going to be doomed in 50 years and probably before that. I think something in 50 years, giving supposed to be down to single digits in terms of percentage of the population giving to charity. And some suggestions are like, well, higher ask strings. And I'm not saying ask strings are not important. And I'm not saying that we don't think ask strings matter in whatever. I just think the problem is bigger than ask strings. And sometimes, what if the ask string, what if the things you do before somebody gets an ask string are so well thought out and are meaningful enough that the ask string almost doesn't matter? Because ask string is last mile optimization. Exactly. And I don't think our problems at this point are we haven't optimized the last mile well enough yet. We're not even getting people there necessarily. Or by the time they get there, they're not even inclined to necessarily make a larger gift. And an ask string itself is not going to fix that. And I know that the people who care a lot about ask strings, I know they're not suggesting that. This is not me picking a fight with anybody here. I think tools like Ask Genius are genius. And I think people who think about ask strings are geniuses, truly. I just think we sometimes maybe...
Yeah. I mean, also... Okay.
That, yeah.
Another angle to kind of say the same thing. I've been reading about SEO and about website conversion optimization, which is another last mile thing you can do in your nonprofit. You analyze, you test so that your people are more likely than they would otherwise to take a certain action that you want them to take. Sign up to the newsletter. There's lots of things. I read some advice that I felt was good, which said, until you actually have 1,000 people per day looking at your website, This is not the best lever for you to pull. It's going to take too much time. It's going to be hard for you to learn what's working, what isn't working, hard or / even impossible. Mm-hmm. And you could do other things, which I think is kind of what you're saying. So, you know, maybe you just need enough people in a good frame of mind reaching that last mile to get to a point where ask strings start to be important. Like if you have 2 people per quarter, you know, getting there, it's just going to be really hard to know. Was it a good ask string? Blah, you know, just, but if you have 1,000 people a month,
yeah,
then that's kind of a different thing. I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And sometimes we send to tens of thousands of people something, and we think about the ask string quite a great deal. And sometimes we're sending to 500 or 1,000 people, and it's important, but it's not going to take up a whole lot of bandwidth trying to optimize it or to get it just right. I think SEO is important. SEO is a long game thing, but I'm struggling to find the right way of framing this. Because I don't want to come across as saying these things don't matter, because I do truly believe that they matter. It might just be a thing of priority where we're putting so much priority on them sometimes, and we're saying this is going to solve fundraising. When what it's going to solve for, it's going to solve last mile optimization.
Yeah, I get it. And if the big picture problem is that we don't have enough people getting to that last mile,
yeah,
what you need is, I don't know, better buses, better cars, better wheels. Not that type of thing. Hey, I noticed we just got to our destination, Mike. What do you think about I catch up with you next week for another ride?
Sounds good. That means there's another person in Zoom waiting for their meeting to start. So this was fun. Good ride. We'll do it again next week.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you for listening to the Donor Growth Podcast, brought to you by the Donor Participation Project and BuildGood.com.
If you found today's episode helpful, please help us by sharing it with a friend, posting about it on LinkedIn, or giving it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We'll be back next week, but in the meantime, remember that donor growth is possible.